You're so coy, alluring, angel with a wicked smile. Sleeping 20 hours a day, never lay a paw on dusty clay. I'll keep your litter natural, no chemicals in your nostrils, just corn below, so every time you go, you'll know your shh don't stink.
World's best cat litter for the world's best cat.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back. I'm here with Kat Packer, Director of Drug Markets and Legal Regulation for the Drug Policy Alliance. And really love to have the chance to have the opportunity to, Kat, to talk about your expertise in Los Angeles and the areas, obviously, for business owners out there. But we're going to go more into the, I guess you can say more in the advocacy realm. And by the way, to know what the Drug Policy Alliance is doing on a regular basis, I want to go and make sure to pass along to people at the website, drugpolicy.org, drugpolicy.org. Make sure to look at that while we go along. A recent Drug Policy Alliance press release recently wrote this, quote, President Biden was once an architect of former President Clinton's harmful 1994 crime bill and the drug war escalated. However, Biden has since come a long way in acknowledging our country's racist history of marijuana criminalization and enforcement. And as you mentioned, Kat, at the start of the program, how about that on the 2020 campaign trail, he made a pledge to fully decriminalize marijuana. That has not happened, but his administration is now walking back on those promises. Instead of offering symbolic reform in place of real change, and black advocates, policy experts, health leaders, and marijuana reform supporters are calling him out and demanding better. So I want to make this point that, you know, while the president has not done even close to enough to address this right here in terms of those that have been oppressed, incarcerated, and underrepresented and marginalized, right? There has been at least some work in Congress, at least I could say, from all I've seen in the last, you know, couple of years, at least Congress is trying to, again, ruffle up something to make something happen. So there's the three senators with Senator Schumer, Senator Booker, and Senator Wyden that have led the charge. Ron Wyden, Cory Booker, Chuck Schumer. But now here's the thing, is that while his Democratic colleagues are trying to make a push to get cannabis, at least give more relief to the cannabis industry or to legalize or decriminalize. I mean, Chuck Schumer has also said it himself. Why is it that President Biden is not in lockstep with his Democratic colleagues? Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think on one hand, President Biden has always been much more conservative on the issue of cannabis policy reform than his Democratic colleagues, if you remember back to the 2020 election. When Senator Booker was running for president as well, he called out President Biden on his past record as, you know, championing some of the U.S.'s drug war policies, particularly the crime bill. And President Biden in the 2020 election campaign, to his credit, acknowledged that his past drug policies were harmful. Significantly, he also acknowledged that they had been particularly harmful to Black and Brown communities. But I think that there's this reality that historically, this is where the president has positioned himself. He'd always been a little bit more conservative than other folks in at least in his party, and I think that. My personal opinion is that I think on some efforts, he's trying to like play it safe. I think that, he's trying to walk this line and be a little bit more conservative in his rhetoric before he said that he wants to, quote unquote, follow the research and follow the science. And, you know, we now have that research, but it's still not supporting the outcome is still not is less than what he promised. And so, you know, one would hope that the Biden administration, particularly if marijuana is ultimately moved to Schedule 3, that the Biden administration would respond and say, you know, I've done everything that I can do through this particular administrative process. It's resulted in Schedule 3. Schedule 3 is less than what I promised. I've exhausted my administrative steps for the descheduling process. So I'm going to call on Congress to deschedule and decriminalize cannabis. That's something that he could do. And he's yet to do it yet. I think that he's particularly right now, while this administrative review process is going on, I think his administration is taking the position that they want to be able to allow it to be an independent process. But nevertheless, I think that it would be important, particularly for the communities that President Biden made these commitments and promises to, for his administration and for him personally to acknowledge that this falls short and then call on Congress to take action. He has an enormous bully pulpit in the presidency. And he, for example, could call on the Department of Justice to issue a new memo for enforcement. He could call on the Department of Treasury to issue new guidance for banking for the cannabis industry. He can call on his Department of Education to mitigate concerns related to employment barriers. He can do the same for Veterans Affairs. He can do the same for Housing and Urban Affairs. There's so much discretion that these agencies have, and they haven't utilized it in a coordinated way. Again, I think we've seen it with the Department of Justice and the Treasury Department thus far. But if the president is truly committed to righting the wrongs of criminalization, we need to see more. And the reality is that he can do more. I'd understand if he had taken all of the steps that he could. And he has taken some steps, right, at this point. But there's this reality that there is more that he can do. And he can also call on this other branch of government in Congress to take steps as well. And in an ideal situation, we have both Congress and the Biden administration and the White House saying that we need a new approach to cannabis, that we should be decriminalizing cannabis for personal use, and that we can work together to try and figure out a new regulatory framework. This isn't impossible. It's just going to take leadership, and that's what we're waiting for.
I think when it comes to President Biden, and I don't think anybody looks back at, sometimes you just got to look back at history and see what, you know, the previous stances were before. And, you know, listen, even congressmen can be subject to change their minds. Schumer himself said that, you know, he had probably had the same kind of like-minded, without paraphrasing, not saying that he exactly said this, but, you know, it wasn't until Colorado and the start of their program and the success and how, the safety of the public was going on in terms of how Colorado was able to roll out their medical and then adult use programs, that, you know, it could be implemented. It was safe. It was effective. And you see a lot of people being helped by it. So that's why he changed his mind on what happened with that. And with Senator White, it was just a matter that I guess he always had just that longstanding opinion about decriminalizing or at least getting cannabis legalized in some way, shape, or form. But with President Biden, back being a senator, he sat on a lot of, he was a chairperson on the Senate Judiciary hearing on the control of foreign drug trafficking activities. I always think about the Cocaine Cowboys documentary, always kind of focuses on that, and him specifically talking to Barry Seal, who was the drug smuggler bringing in, you know, drugs from Colombia into the U.S. And I think that President Biden, or back then Senator Biden, couldn't distinguish between the two. Doesn't see in the last, 30 some odd year, or 40 years, basically, where the difference was in terms of how cocaine is one different illicit drug, but cannabis has been proven to be not in the same category, which is why, you know, just to see the final of the scheduling, I think it's always a matter of that there was a pressure that the HHS was being allowed to deschedule. I don't know if it was so much his decision, because I think also at his advanced age, President Biden wasn't going to change his mind on this issue. And second, it was going to have to be that people need to be at the very top or within his ear. They were going to have to, you know, persuade or push or pressure to make this possible. You think about that part, that maybe there was just part of the thing where that's why he's out of touch with his other, you know, colleagues as to why that never changed. It's one of those things of that. What do you think about that part?
Yeah, I think it's interesting in part because I do think that our perspective, and I think our collective perspective on this has changed. I think, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, folks may have said that, criminalization is the best approach that we should take, and criminalization is actually going to promote public safety. We know better. We now have decades of data from prohibition and a decade of data from regulation. And what we can see that the data is, if we actually want to do this responsibly and reduce harms associated with cannabis, the best way for us to do so is to regulate it, not prohibit it. And so I think that because we have these examples of now 24 different states that have these adult use programs and even medical programs, that we're able to demonstrate what we've known, or at least what we now know, which is regulation is actually the public safety strategy, and that we actually want to take a public health approach to this as well. But I'm actually surprised, and maybe this is my naivete, because back in the day or in the 94 crime bill, I was 3, so I don't have any recollection of what President Biden was doing back then. I watched a lot of videos to get caught up with all of this. But the reality is that his Vice President Harris, championed legislation when she was a senator that would have legalized, completely descheduled cannabis. And I think that a lot of cannabis reform advocates, despite Vice President Harris's own history with cannabis criminalization, were really expecting, particularly because of the promises that were made, that we would have seen more bold, courageous, and tangible relief provided from this administration. And that's in part why I think a lot of communities, particularly Black and Brown communities and cannabis communities that know that this is less than what is promised, are left wondering what's next.
And that's the other part, that Vice President Harris, I don't know if it was just a change of stance, because as Attorney General in California, she was, charging for cannabis-related offenses and put a lot of people in jail as a result. I mean, that's been made pretty public. But at the same time, she put out her own bill to legalize. I don't understand. There's a part where the logic to put that all together about the change in that, was there a change of heart or what there was to that? And even as she had a change of heart and how cannabis is right now, she didn't have enough pull to get to the president and say, hey, go ahead and go along with this. Let's go ahead and decriminalize. And the most important thing is that legalization or decriminalization, no matter what, that is a win for whichever side of the aisle that's on. If it's Democrats or Republicans, by the way, you want to win an election, legalize or decriminalize. You win. It's not even an issue.
There's
any other reason about it. If you just did that part, for all the criticism that the Democrats or the progressives of the party, or what President Biden's been doing right now, you could almost wipe away, the border issue or the fentanyl coming into the country, or whatever other issues you want, the wars we have in other countries that we're funding. You could almost wipe away all that if you just decriminalize or legalize cannabis. And I don't know why, is it just there's not enough money from the lobbying, I guess, to get that to happen? I'm sure there's not enough lobbying money, because obviously a bunch of big pharma has a big role to play in that. But like, that's the part of okay, you're in election season. All these congressional folks are running for re-election. There's the easiest win you have. Don't just talk about it, You can't use it to talk about it anymore. Like, you just can't do what President Biden did. Just say, okay, we're going to promise to decrim. No, do it. You can't just say it anymore. People don't want to hear that anymore. They don't want to hear political talk. Get it done.
Yeah, we want the Nike situation on here. We want the just do it. That's how we feel about the cannabis policy reform. But you're right. Like, this is not a partisan issue. Like, Americans, period, support federal legalization, both Republicans, Democrats, independents, everybody's got their own take on how. But what's been resolved at this point is that we should be decriminalizing, we should be legalizing. And I think that you know, the sooner that our politicians are willing to follow the will of the people, the better off we will be on this. But, you know, at this point, I think that part of what we also need to see are voters get involved and people recognize that their vote matters. And we can't have candidates take our votes for granted. And in order for us to make sure that we don't have candidates taking our votes for granted, we have an opportunity to weigh in and talk about this issue. We need to be calling for decriminalization. We need to be calling for legalization. We can acknowledge, you know, progress. We can acknowledge, you know, whatever steps have been taken. But I think that while we have this opportunity, this moment that, you know, we haven't had in 50 years, whether this federal reevaluation, we've got to utilize this moment and speak with a united voice and say we're united for marijuana decriminalization. And I'm using that to plug a coalition that I'm working with called United for Marijuana Decriminalization. You can find more information at decriminalizemarijuana.com. But I'm working with a coalition of folks to do just that, to try and push the administration to support decriminalization and to utilize its executive authority, everything that it has in its executive authority to right the wrongs of criminalization.
Great. Now, when I think about it, there's it's amazing what we have in terms of the bipartisanship that has been coming on in bills anyway. You can bring up the States Act with Elizabeth Warren and Cory Gardner, Jimmy Raskin and Nancy Mace working on a bill for cannabis for employees. When it comes to, what is it, Jerry Nadler, Earl Blumenauer, Sheila Jackson Lee, and others looking to decriminalize back in September. Like, there's been enough of issues where we see bipartisanship across the board continuing to be put out there. So it's not the Congress as a problem. It's like, well, and then you can't expect, you know, the president is not going to just change his mind. It's just, it's too late for that to happen. You just need somebody else with a new mind, and that's going to get Congress to work together. And I will say, if it's decriminalization or legalization, it has to be a supermajority. And for those that think we're going to get happy talk and say, hey, you know, oh, maybe it'll happen next year or this election season. No. We need significant change in D.C. It's got to be one side or the other, not this hyper-divided thing that we have right now on the 50-50. It's been like this for a long time. And let's just say it like this, too. We've had presidential administrations that had super majorities, one way or the other, to be able to go and do so. I mean, if somebody had the last chance to really go and decriminalize or, you know, give us legalization, it should have been President Obama. His first term, he had the supermajority. It should have happened then. But it wasn't the real chance to happen. It should have happened that long ago. But we didn't get the chance to do that. But again, you know, history, you know, hopefully we can change the course of that soon enough. Now, one thing I want to bring up before we go to, well, actually, let's go and go to commercial break. We're running out of time. My God, we were running so long. I'm here again with Kat Packer, Director of Drug Markets and Legal Regulation for Drug Policy Alliance. Again, drugpolicy.org is the website. I'm here again with Kat Packer, Director of Drug Markets and Legal Regulation for Drug Policy Alliance. Again, drugpolicy.org is the website. We're back after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're back here in Blunt Business with Kat Packer, Director of Drug Markets and Legal Regulation for Drug Policy Alliance. Kat, I'm losing track of time. We're having so much fun here. I'm really enjoying the talk. This has been great.
For the weeds.
It has been, right? Oh, my goodness. So you made mention of the HHS, the scheduling, the medical scientific reviews. We've already gone through that. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to ask you a question about that. But besides the congressional gridlock we see right now, where with bills have been trying to put out there with bipartisan, in terms of D.C., they've tried to do things, right? Safe banking. Let's put it inserted into the National Defense Authorization Act. Let's try to put it into another omnibus spending bill. You know, not the best way to do it, but I understand the intent. And I appreciate that. Or, you know, they've tried to do a few things to try to incorporate maybe some other end of the Safe Banking Act with a couple of provisions taken out. Whatever they could do to try to get cannabis put through in some way besides the HHS, that Congress is trying to do something about it. What do you think about what D.C., besides what President Biden has not been able to do or has not done, what do you think about what the congressional leaders have tried to do just to try to get something go through for cannabis, some kind of relief?
Yeah. And you mentioned, like, there's been a lot of bipartisan activity with different folks introducing bills over the course of the last couple of years to address different federal issues in relation to cannabis. So whether this is veterans access or small business administration access or protect.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Actions for housing, access to food benefits, etc. So there have been a bunch of like standalone bills that address different things. And then there have been a number of pieces of legislation that we at DPA refer to as comprehensive descheduling bills. Things like the MORE Act, the Cannabis Administration Opportunity and Administration Act, and things like Nancy Mace's States Reform Act. And so we've seen all of this different activity where folks are introducing bills, but for all of the kind of criticisms we've mentioned about the administrative efforts thus far, there also have been challenges in Congress as well. You know, it's one thing to introduce a bill; it's another thing to get that bill passed, and that's what folks in the advocacy space have not been successful at thus far. I think I read last year, in part because I kind of just transitioned over the course of the last 2 years from doing local regulatory work to now working at the federal level. But I read an article that said that, you know, folks have been working on the Safe Banking Act or some form of that for 10 years now, right? Like this is like the 10th year of just trying to get protections for banks who are doing business with the cannabis industry. And even that hasn't passed thus far. And so for me, that tells me a couple of things. I think one, there's been a lot of like debate happening in DC about whether or not it makes sense to like do incremental reforms or comprehensive reform. That a lot of the times when these debate happens and folks, particularly advocates, push for comprehensive reform, the pushback is, well, then we won't get any incremental reform done. Well, to those folks who feel that way, the incremental reform that the industry has been focused on for the last 10 years has been Safe Banking, and that's made it nowhere. And I think that part of the reason why the industry has been unsuccessful in moving federal legislation isn't necessarily because there aren't a number of policymakers who don't sympathize with them or understand their plight, but this issue of Safe Banking is not like one that is popular to the American people. American people don't necessarily know about the barriers that cannabis industry businesses face. They probably know somebody who went to jail for cannabis, or maybe they know someone who uses cannabis and understand that that's illegal at the federal level. And so I think that if the industry and folks were to come together and focus on reforms that you can mobilize people behind, you can get masses of people to organize behind, I think the industry would do a lot better. But because it's been focused on such a narrow kind of scope of issues, at least in terms of what's been prioritized over the course of the last 2 years since I've been following this closely, I think that that's been part of the industry's failure thus far. I think the industry would be much further along if it actually centered or at least included in some of the legislation that it's trying to prioritize addressing issues that impact a broader populations of people, because people can get behind that and support that and I think a more intentional way. I think that this conversation about rescheduling is going to pass the potential, and I think it will be a catalyst to efforts in Congress to react. There will be a reaction from Congress from this, and I anticipate seeing different bills introduced in response to whatever final decision comes out. But I think the issue will remain that in order to move something through Congress, that we need to have our elected officials and leaders one, working together to understand what these issues are, and then two, willing to work together to prioritize passing these things through Congress. And far too often, cannabis is simply either not prioritized, or, you know, it's caught up in the larger horse trading and negotiation that happens in D.C. So, for example, the reason why the Safe Banking Act isn't moving right now actually has nothing to do with the cannabis industry. There's a specific provision of the Safe Banking Act that applies to banking generally. And that's the particular provision that's holding out negotiations right now. So this is like, you know, it's not even cannabis, right? At least at this moment, that's being the issue of holding that particular piece up. And there will continue to be barriers. But I think if we can focus on decriminalization, efforts to advance equity, making sure that individual people have rights to possess, use, personally cultivate, that's the type of thing that you can, you know, that Americans can get behind.
Well, let's talk about expungements. So we've already mentioned how President Biden, in his 2020 campaign, made the promise to decriminalize. Well, the one thing he did actually do, technically, but I will say it's performative at best, was that he was going to expunge those that were convictions for possession or distribution. And he said at a campaign event in South Carolina, January 27th, he had mentioned, quote, "I keep my promise when I said no one should be in prison for merely possessing marijuana or using it, and the record should be expunged, a promise made and a promise kept." But the cannabis pardons that he did create only happened for a very small few, extended to individuals whose offenses took place in the District of Columbia or in other lands under the jurisdiction of federal law. The vast majority of arrests and convictions for simple possession and use of marijuana have taken place at local and state levels. And that's why I said, I'm personally saying it's performative. Like, I mean, I get what he tried to do, but when you look at the real fine print, yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was just that to try to throw everybody saw the headline. They didn't see what it actually was. Let's just say it like that. And that's my opinion only. But because of that, I feel like that's one of the reasons where the HHS recommendation took place, because that expungement announcement didn't serve the president or the administration as intended. Do you feel like that might have been what happened with the HHS? This is why it happened, because of the fact that this announcement for expunging offenses, it really wasn't what it was?
I have to believe that based on what the administration has done thus far, that they've only done they've only addressed like the tip of the iceberg. Like there's a longer list of issues that they can address. And this is probably just, I'm hoping, right, that they actually have the list of things that need to be done, and that they've only, you know, taken these few steps. But even in relation to the pardons, right, I just want to clarify, what the president promised was expungements, and what he's been able to grant thus far have been pardons. And there are a difference between expungements, which would completely eliminate and erase a person's record, and a pardon, which is a certificate that folks can get that essentially provides forgiveness from the federal government for that particular record. But that record still exists, and so it can still be a barrier, and there is still a need for those records to be completely eliminated. Now, the reality is that in order for an expungement process to happen, Congress would need to act. But that's another one of these issues where, instead of acting like he's actually delivered on a promise, take the action to actually do the thing that you said that you were going to do. Call on Congress to support legislation that would create an expungement process to deliver on that promise. So I think that there are a number of steps that the administration can take, and you know, to the extent that we can point these things out and help them move along, I think that it's in their best interest to do more, because people expect more. My concern is that a lot of folks are going to try and like do a victory lap about this, and I think a lot of industry folks, right, are going to do a victory lap, in part because they're going to be relief from 280E, this tax provision, and they should, right? Like, folks shouldn't be subject to this penalty. But I think it's going to leave a lot of communities, particularly Black and Brown communities, feeling like, why were we targeted with this rhetoric but not with action?
Right. Well, because, okay, at the end of 2023, 11 people were given clemency, and the other ones, there were going to be some expansions of, you know, pardoning those a simple possession on federal lands eligible. Doesn't mean that they actually got off of those charges or that those charges were cleaned of the record. Nothing said at all.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Well, you would know the stat, if I'm, instead of me looking forward, what would be an accurate amount of those that are in prison right now, local, state, that are incorrectly being incarcerated for drug offenses? What would be the amount right now if you had a number that the Drug Policy Alliance has been quoting?
Yeah, I want to say that there are at least multiple tens of thousands of people. The last Prisoner Project admittedly has some of the best data around this today, particularly trying to track. And that's part of the issue, is that all of this data is in a bunch of different places. So local jurisdictions have their data, state has its data, and then the federal government has its data. But in relation to the pardons that have been issued thus far, it's important to note, and you said this, like a lot of people were excluded. It only included things like simple possession or attempted possession. Most of the people who are, it didn't release a single person from prison. Most of the people who are in prison for cannabis-related offenses are there for trafficking offenses. And one of the things that President Biden said in his announcement when he was talking about, you know, providing relief and pardons, he was just like, you know, this is an activity that many states no longer prohibit. Well, many states also no longer prohibit manufacturing and the engagement of business. And so I think that if we're going to have a conversation about pardons and expungements, we also have to make sure that we are putting measures in place to take care of offenses beyond possession. 80% of the folks who are serving time for those elevated cannabis offenses beyond possession are Black and brown.
ACLU actually put quite a bit of information about all there was. There said that was in drug arrests in 2010, 52% were all for marijuana. They mentioned the fact that over 7 million people have been busted for having cannabis from 2001 to 2010. And they also made the mention was that Blacks have been nearly four times more likely than whites to be arrested for cannabis possession. And they also made a mention that states, for enforcing cannabis laws every year, they waste $3.6 billion. States. A year. Incredible. This is the part where, you know, the case has been made. And, you know, as you said, last Prisoner Project, they said, you know, probably more trials around the area, 30 to 40,000 that are incarcerated right now that are not going to see any pardon as a result of this right here. Nothing's going to happen of that as a moment of this point right here. So there's a lot that's going on with this. And like I said, it didn't do anything. There are obviously people that are, you know, people of color. If they know anyone that is in jail right now or incarcerated because of possession or distribution, well, they're not getting out of jail. They don't know anybody that's gotten out for any of these federal prisons that are getting out. They don't hear about it. I don't think there's a lot of people that are in Leavenworth right now that are probably, you know, that were being pardoned as a result of this, but we don't really won't know the information about it. And that's the other part that's not being said about who's eligible and if any of those folks that are being put under this supposed pardon are the ones that are going to be out in the first place. We don't know anything about that. So I want to think one more thing about decriminalization that you brought up on the program. And by the way, this is going to be most likely a two-part episode because we've gone so long on this, but this was so worth it. So, Kat, you were on the Cash Color Cannabis podcast. I'm going to paraphrase what you actually said on the program. Quote, there are lots of leaders, even presidential candidates, that say on the campaign trail that they support states' rights. So if you're willing to support the ability for states to make a decision, then why wouldn't you support decriminalization? Because it's only under a framework of decriminalization that there are going to be penalties in place for the states that make a decision. So talk about your stance on decriminalization and why you feel it serves a better purpose for the state programs that have been rolled out or the legalization efforts that are being made in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and this kind of gets back to our conversation of rescheduling versus decriminalization and descheduling. But The reality is that as long as marijuana is a controlled substance under the Controlled Substances Act, as long as it's scheduled, it's going to be criminalized under federal law. And the criminalization under federal law means that state programs, state laws, whether they're state laws that are creating medical marijuana programs and medical access, or are authorizing adult use and recreational access, all of those programs will still be legal, and those laws will still be in conflict with federal law. And so what I was mentioning on Cash Color Cannabis was that I think that there's this disconnect and some of the understanding maybe from some policymakers, because you'll have folks, and I mentioned in this particular example, like presidential candidate Nikki Haley, who says that she supports a position of states' rights and wants to defer to the states on decisions of cannabis. Well, in order to practically implement her position, the best pathway to do so, and really the only pathway to do so, would be to remove cannabis from the Controlled Substances Act, to decriminalize it, so that those state laws that actually did authorize medical programs or recreational programs wouldn't be in violation of state law. Now, decriminalizing or descheduling cannabis at the federal level would not require any states to create medical marijuana programs or adult use programs. So it actually is a situation that best fosters a decision where states can take the lead on what cannabis policy should look like. And I think all of our efforts thus far, you know, the 10 years of cannabis regulation that's happened at the state level, I think that most folks who are doing this work, at least in the advocacy space, in the industry space, are of the position that we still want the states to lead cannabis policy. Well, we don't necessarily want to be in a situation where we have a third layer of bureaucracy and licensing and taxation and all of these things unnecessarily and not thoughtfully. And so we're not asking necessarily the federal government to, you know, immediately take the lead and drive this train. It's more so, how do we create a process where they can learn from what's happened at the state level thus far? I think that decriminalization, descheduling, puts us in a position where we can better support states' rights. So if you support states' rights, even if you, fashion yourself to be more conservative on the issue, and even if you supported a state maintaining prohibition, you could support decriminalization at the federal level and state prohibition. I'm not going to encourage you to do so, because that's not where I stand on the issue. But I think that folks are having a hard time understanding mechanically the difference between federal law and state law and the implications between the two.
We're going to leave the conversation there. Kat, this is really wonderful you've been on with us, and really appreciate you taking time out to go and talk so many areas from business into this end of, you know, the ongoing push that we have out there to try to see something happen when it comes to legalization, decriminalization of cannabis, which obviously the whole industry wants to go and see because of what it will do in terms of the impact to the rest of the nation, and then all these other states that have not had a chance to be a part of this. There's so much more that can happen that we're looking forward to seeing, but again, the conversation continues. We'll just have to keep talking about it. So again, website is drugpolicy.org. And if you can tell me real quickly about where people can go, and, you know, if you're going to be speaking anywhere in the coming months, or, you know, what else Drug Policy Alliance is doing right now that people should be aware of.
Absolutely. If you're interested in following more of my work with the Drug Policy Alliance, you can follow drugpolicy.org or visit deschedulemarijuana.com. If you're interested in more information about the coalition I've been working with, United for Marijuana Decriminalization, you can go to decriminalizemarijuana.com. We're really hoping to encourage folks to call on the administration to take further actions on federal marijuana reform and to support federal marijuana decriminalization. So thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Again, here with Kat Packer, Director of Drug Markets and Drug Legal Regulation for the Drug Policy Alliance. Thank you for being on with us, and thank you, listeners, for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.